For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? One-on-one conversations with some of your favorite artists. Find this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Spreaker.com. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that wants to play a game, it's SIFPOD. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most weekends, or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
I'd like to play a game.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he's given this podcast 1,000 Sundays, but it ain't worth 3 Saturday afternoons. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. We didn't know he was a podcaster. We thought he was a singer-songwriter. It's Ian Whittington, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey. Woo! Hey, guys. That voice was terrifying. That is amazing, and I want it now.
Yeah, it's called voice mod. It's free.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find a voice mod somewhere. Ian is joining us for the first time. Which, by the way, means for our amazing SIFPOP members, you got to hear his list of shame game for this week's bonus podcast for our amazing SIFPOP members. So that was fun, and it's good to have you on, man. I came into contact through mutual friend of the show, well, actually host emeritus of the show, Danae Hughes, who does D&D stuff with Ian, and found out he was a big-time movie lover. I went on their podcast, D&D Therapy. Out of nowhere one morning, just got a text, hey, want to come on a podcast this morning? And
you got all the notice.
Was able to do that.
Aaron, you got an invite to be on a D&D podcast before me.
I know, right? Who would have thought of it?
Oh, you a D&D man?
Indeed.
Oh, Aaron, see you later. All right, bye. Get off. Get off your own show.
So, met him through that. We had fun talking Wallace and Gromit and some other movie stuff. You may have picked up Ian has a little bit of an accent.
Bit of a twang.
A bit of a twang. That is because...
He speaks the king's English.
Ian is from the UK and is on a podcast called An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies. Is that correct?
Correct. I play the Irishman, just to confuse everybody.
Wait, is that true?
No, it's not. It's okay. Absolutely not. The entire episode would be very offensive because I can't do accents.
I've heard your Southern U.S. accent. It's pretty terrible.
Deliberately not. Yeah, not doing that. Nope.
So we're happy to have Ian on the show, another fellow movie lover and a podcaster. And again, if you want to check out the podcast, it is called An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies. Before we get into the reviews and all that stuff today, which we've got a great show heading into today, I do want to let you know that SIFPOP has been invited to have an HQ page on Letterboxd. Now, what that means is if you're a Letterboxd user, it's kind of the thing they do for websites, podcasts, media companies, where you can do lists of the stuff you're talking about on the show, link to articles where you have reviews on the website, all that kind of stuff. So if you're interested in that and you're on Letterboxd, just search for SIFPOP, and the HQ page should pop up there. And then when we do best ever challenges, that kind of stuff, those lists will be there for you to put on your watch list. If there's something we mention that you want to make sure you see, that will be available there for you. So again, that is on Letterboxd if you do the Letterboxd thing, which I do and have been really getting into this year. And enjoying that. So yeah, I wanted to make sure you guys knew about that before we got into the show today. We've got all the usual stuff, Buried Treasure. We've got a Best Ever Challenge, Best Ever W Movies. We're going to talk about The Woman in the Window and Spiral for the movies today. So that's going to be the show today, and let's get right into it. Let's talk about Spiral.
Find him. They're hours, not days.
How can I catch this guy? If there's nobody on the bus, I can bus!
You can't do this alone.
Whoever did this has another motive. Something personal.
When was the last time you saw your father?
Jigsaw copycat.
This is gonna go sideways fast. I'm a love spin like a spiral.
Working in the shadow of his father, Detective Ezekiel Zeke Banks and his rookie partner take charge of an investigation into grisly murders that are eerily reminiscent of the city's gruesome past. Unwittingly entrapped in a deepening mystery, Zeke finds himself at the center of the killer's morbid game. Spiral is, of course, the latest kind of reboot of the Saw franchise. Chris Rock bringing this one to us, Samuel Jackson in there as well. And I'm really, really curious about this. I have never seen a Saw movie until this week, and I decided to watch the first Saw movie before getting into Spiral. It is the one I had heard from most of my movie friends that I might enjoy. It's the purest of the idea, is what they said. You know, this idea of puzzles and, you know, the idea of, you know, solving these, you know, gruesome puzzles to figure out, you know, what's going on and that kind of stuff. So that it would appeal to me on that level, if no other level. So we'll talk about our history with the franchise here soon, but let's go ahead and kick it off with our overall thoughts on Spiral itself. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Ian.
I disliked it, verging on hated it.
Ooh,
so
okay.
Just on that board, I'm going to stay in disliked it, but that might change the more I talk about it.
I know that feeling. I know that feeling. Andrew, what about you?
I think Ian is like, well, I'm new on the show. I don't know if I need to come in with and hate it immediately. Yeah. I've been here for a long time. I'll say I hated it. I really hated it.
That makes me feel better. Good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go hate it as well.
God, this is a horrible movie.
It is so bad.
I will say I'm willing to give it a high side of hated it, if that's a thing. Like, you know, if you can go like, I hate this movie, but, you know, it's like the lesser hate I can have.
Okay. I thought when you meant high hate, like you really
hated
it.
Yeah, it's weird when you start talking about it that way, isn't it? No.
Oh, I struggled with that distinction as well.
Yeah. I mean, as the, you know, so you got hated it down here at the bottom. It's up towards the top of the hated it, which means the least of the hated it. But at the top of the hated it, I can see why it's confusing. Anyhow, what I'll say is I almost didn't like it.
That means you liked it.
Right, exactly. Nothing is clearing anything up.
What?
Guys, I got a question. Is Chris Rock a horrible actor?
In this?
Well,
I mean,
Fargo.
This is bad.
Have you seen him in Fargo?
No. Was that this season or was the season before?
It was this season.
I haven't seen this season.
Okay. No, I haven't seen the
last one. I saw was the Ewan McGregor season.
I liked him in Fargo. And I think, as with most people and most actors, material is going to play quite a role. Direction's going to play quite a role. Editing's going to play quite a role. I really give actors a lot of benefit of the doubt because at the end of the day, they are very rarely in charge of the performance that's put on screen. In fact, oftentimes actors are asked to go against their instincts because a director wants something different. And so, like, I give actors a lot of benefit of the doubt. It's hard for me to say Chris Rock is a bad actor because I liked him in Fargo for one. And for two, you just never know what happened behind the scenes. But yes, in this, it's rough. And he's not the only one that's rough.
No, they're all bad. Everybody's horrible.
In this movie. I think it sounds like maybe Ian and I liked it about the same. Ian, I'm going to start with you because I want you to... I know for a fact you have watched the other Saw movies and even in a weird way consider yourself a fan of the franchise. Andrew and I are not. This is definitely not up our alley. So I think we should start with you. Kind of give us your background on your Saw history, and then kind of lead that into your thoughts on Spiral.
Okay. But it all started back in 1995. If we're going way back. So the reason, yeah. I think the reason I like the Saw franchise, and I am, I think I described it to you, Aaron, as I'm a Saw apologist. The thing I like about horror films is that they will get a reaction out of you. Like, if they're doing the right thing, they will definitely, they can do extreme things that make you go, oh, that might be, oh, I need to look away from this. Or it might be, wow, that's unique. And Saw, the very first one, absolutely did that for me. Are we okay to spoil a film that came out forever and ever
ago? Yeah, I think that's a cool. I mean, I know that these movies are twist based. They're very twisty. That's kind of one of the things they try to do.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been told that as the sequels go on, they're just basically twist fests. They just
exponentially more twisty and exponentially less logical.
Yeah.
As it goes on.
Yeah. But with the, go ahead with the. I mean, you know. It's fine.
So the ending of the mystery in the first Saw, and you've got your two chaps in there that you don't know why they're there. They don't know why they're there. They're drip-fed clues. Watching him go through the decision to cut his own leg off, like, that decision is agonizing, and it goes on for so, so long. Mm-hmm. And it is at the very last point of no return that he has to do that.
Right.
And that's not even the final thing. You've got the reveal at the end that Kramer is in the room the whole movie. It has been staring you right in the face. And that hooked me. And I think I still watch Saw 7 because I enjoyed Saw 1 so much. Mm-hmm. And I was like, every single film, I think I'm chasing the feeling of the first film.
Have you ever gotten close?
Way to describe it.
Have you ever gotten close to that feeling?
No. Maybe.
That's too bad.
No, honestly not, which is sad, considering the amount of hours I've put into watching. Halloween just gone, I rewatched all of them for my podcast, and decided that was a bad idea, because I did them all, and my co-host didn't. And he was like, well, I didn't quite get round to it, so
yeah.
It was just me having a really bad time.
So how does that lead in kind of to Spiral? Like, some overall general thoughts on this one as somebody who is chasing that, you know, idea of the first one, has watched all of them. You know, where does this one rank? What are some of your general thoughts on it?
So I didn't go... The Chris Rock thing is really interesting. I didn't go into this thinking, oh, Chris Rock's going to ruin it. I actually thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Chris Rock, Samuel L. Jackson, that's bold. Until I saw the trailer, and I was like, Chris Rock's going to be shouting a lot in this film, isn't he? and he absolutely is. The film, I think I put it bottom. It is dead bottom of the franchise for me. It feels like a fan of the franchise who hadn't watched the films in about 10 years described it to somebody else, and then that person converted that into like a charades thing to the creator of this film. And that's how we ended up with this film.
Like, it's a game of telephone, like an old school game of telephone.
Exactly. Yeah. And the message has got completely lost. And you can see some of the hallmarks and some of the things, but they've taken all of the wrong messages from the previous films, plonked it in here, and thought Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson doing Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson things would save the movie. And it just doesn't.
Is there anything, knowing it's at the bottom of the list for you, maybe I am the one who liked this the most, knowing that it's at the bottom of the list for you, is there anything you took out of it that you enjoyed? Like anything, any positives?
Yeah, so when I was writing my notes, I started highlighting what was good and bad to make it easier to find, and it just became a page of red with one little green thing, so I ditched the highlighting system entirely. It was redundant. So the opening 5 minutes, I was like, cool, this starts with no baggage. There's no previously on Saw,
right,
which is what later in the franchise it basically became. This was completely fresh, new people, new everything. We know that John is dead. And it felt fresh. It was like, okay, this is a chance to start without the baggage of the previous films. Mm-hmm. And now I wish it had started with the baggage of the previous films. But that started out as a positive, but it didn't pay off. As we get through the film.
Yeah, you're right. There is something about a reboot that has the chance to, because that's what this really is. I mean, I know it's a sequel. Yeah. It is absolutely 100% a sequel. It takes place in the same universe. It understands that this is something, you know, that these other movies have happened. But it doesn't address them in really any major way other than through a little bit of lip service about, you know, the characters.
You've got your cliche stereotype of everything pinned on a board and you get the glory shots of...
Right, yeah. Right. So there is a chance in rebooting like that to make it something new, to do something interesting. And I think if I'm seeing what I think I'm seeing here, I think the idea was to make this social commentary. Was the idea was to talk about the racial element of things, to, I mean, there's no mistaking some of the final things that happen in this movie mm-hmm. as making a statement about the racial issues we're dealing with in 2021 and in America, you know,
for, totally agree.
Since 1776. You know, like there's no mistaking that there's a racial reckoning here that is trying, that point's trying to be made. And it's not just the end in kind of the more obvious nods to it. Throughout, there are conversations. In fact, the whole plot line is about the police and, you know, crooked cops and that, you know, it's right baked in there. So I think that's what they were trying to do, but it is such a mess that none of it can really resonate. None of it can come to the front in a way where you feel it. Like, you watch Get Out, right? And you know there's social commentary going on here. But the story is so good and so well told that you get to experience the very literal story in front of you while also feeling the ramifications of the social commentary that's underneath it and the metaphor that's underneath it. This movie doesn't give you that chance because its story is such a mess and everything is so jumbled that any of these kind of moments of trying to appeal to some sort of theme or commentary, they're just undermined. They just have no way to resonate because they just seem like winks. They seem like winks and nods instead of any kind of meaningful foundation to what the film is doing. And so
there's no metaphor here. It's just, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. There really isn't. And there could have been you know, there's a different way, I think, to make this movie where you start with the story that is the evocative of the thing you want to say, but it's just a good, solid story. And then you build in the framework of, you know, the Saw franchise and those kind of things. So yeah, that to me is the reason why I say hated it, but a very light hated it, you know, high side of hated it, however you want to say it, because I do want to give respect for what I think they were trying to do, but I also think they fail at doing it. So, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's almost more disappointing in that way. But yeah, I want to give credit for that.
I think a good analogy is the framework thing. So Star Trek is a framework for telling stories like this. Mm-hmm. And the Saw franchise may not be the first place you go for these deep commentaries on society, but absolutely could have been.
Yeah.
Like you said, it absolutely could have done that, but it just took a sledgehammer to it instead of any kind of precision tool.
It reminds me a lot, in fact, of the first season of the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone reboot. Because that first season of that Twilight Zone reboot felt very much like this. Messy stories that hammered those metaphors. You know, it wasn't a metaphor. It was just right there in front of you. You know, a lot more didactic than the Twilight Zone has been. Second season did a little better, in my opinion. But it's that same thing of finding that balance of just telling a great story that has those themes and messages underneath where they're able to resonate, where you can find that foundation and then translate them. And in this movie, just doesn't do that. Andrew, what are some of your general thoughts? I think you're on the lowest hated it bar here.
Well, talking about, you know, the metaphors and the social commentary, stuff like that, I think, and obviously this is a white man in America's perspective on the whole thing, so there's getting that,
sure,
you know, right up front. But it seemed like it was too... extreme, like it was too ridiculous for me to believe like whatever social commentary you were trying to bring to the forefront is kind of negated by this unrealistic delivery of like how a system works or mm-hmm. how we're supposed to believe that something like this could go on without any kind of insight, or if there was insight that it would be, I'm trying to, you know, while talking about it, trying to, you know, pitter-patter around, you know, the actual storyline and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Which, also going back to the actual structure of the story itself, what I liked about the first Saw movie is that it decided it was going to be a horror...
Time's up!
A horror movie...
You're done.
Yeah, see you guys. No, but it was a horror movie that decided that it wasn't going to follow the formula that had been set in stone since, like, the 70s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That there was going to be, you know, an interesting twist. And granted, I think that the first Saw movie kind of revolutionized and gave fresh blood to the horror genre because there were new, interesting horror movies that came out after Saw. And I do think that Saw, the original one with Cary Elwes, had... you know, something to do with this new life that had been brought to the horror genre. But at the same time, this movie is so paint-by-numbers on the new Saw formula that all the big twists and everything that we are coming to expect are so painfully obvious that there is nothing in this that you find, ooh, I didn't see that coming. This is a total paint-by-numbers Saw horror movie. I think I've seen the first one and then the next two and this one. I don't know how many Saw movies there are total, but I've seen more than one.
Nine, I think.
Yeah, Saw movies?
It's nine. You've got seven main ones and then Jigsaw, which was a prequel, spoiler, and now this one is number nine. Yeah. And 10 Whoa. Is apparently in the works, which will quite cleverly be called Saw 10.
Yeah. Wow. Yes.
But I think that this movie, because of the way it was marketed, you know, this is not... I guess we could say this isn't Jigsaw. We've said that already, right?
I think that is something... Well, I guess with this series, you never know. But, I mean, if you know the Saw movies, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I was still waiting for it to be Jigsaw.
Kramer's dead, yeah.
Right, yeah.
That hasn't stopped him in any of the other movies!
Yeah.
Him being
That's true, that has not stopped him at all. But this movie was marketed as a, we are revamping this franchise, you know? And whenever you hear that, what it told me, and I guess I was wrong, is that we're going to go back to the basic formula. This isn't going to be a gore fest where, you know, there it's just bloody and gross for 2 hours and there might be a twist in there. It's going to have an intricate philosophical meaning behind the horror. That is, and that you know, that discussion that you're having, like, whether, you know, this is... penance, or whether this is, you know, ramifications, or you know, God calling on your sins, or anything like that. You know, there was something about that first movie that built up to the end where Carrie cuts off his foot. You know,
yeah.
It wasn't, you know, that's not the first thing, and there were, I'm not, I feel like I'm just revamping the whole first Saw movie, but yes, there are, like,
let's just do that instead.
Yeah, there are parts of that movie where, you know, you get, like, flashbacks to previous murders and stuff like that. But it all comes down to that central story with those two guys in the cellar. Why are they there? What do they have to do? It was a suspense thriller that had gore elements. It wasn't a gore film that tried to do suspense elements. One of those can work, the other can't.
I'm having thoughts. Apologies. It just happens. But is it possible that Escape Room stole some of the ingenuity behind what some people liked about Saw? Like, that there's this idea that the puzzle making of the whole thing was really part of the formula that people really enjoyed about that first movie, and maybe parts of the others, I don't know. And something like Escape Room, that's what it's about. It's the, you know, it's the puzzle solving. It's the, you know, because in the first Saw movie, you have the X marks the spot where you have to turn off the lights. Like, you've got these moments where there's like almost Escape Room elements to it.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if, like, that's the, because I think they're going to make more of those. They should make more of those Escape Room movies. I think that was, you know, really fun. But I wonder if that's, if Escape Rooms in general, or just our idea of them, have filtered to a way where a movie like Saw is like, well, I don't want to play in that universe. That's a little mainstream. That's a little, you know what I mean? Like there's, I don't
know.
That
is super meta. That is such a meta way to make your own film. Like the thing that my original film influenced, I'm not going to be that thing anymore. Wait.
Right.
But you are the thing that you influenced because you're the thing that, but so I, my love of horror actually goes straight back to The Cube, which is my favorite horror film of all time. And that just, that is a Saw film before Saw happened.
And it's an escape room type film too.
It's like, an escape room. And that just taps, that's probably really weird, but it taps into something in my brain that I like, but I really hope never happens to me.
Well, there's, I think what it, I mean, if you really want to get deep on the psychology of it, the idea of an escape room and the idea of what you're dealing with is that human need to be able to escape the worst parts of our life through our gifts and our intelligence. Like the idea that no matter what happens to us, we want to know we're smart enough to get out of it. And so it appeals to that part of our ego, that part of who we are as humans, that's like, yeah, you think you've got me trapped, but I'm smarter than you. Like, you know, so that's, there's definitely something
and
about
it. The Cube does that better because that plays with, you almost have like six different personalities there, and each personality is a different area of your psyche and which one is going to be more successful. And it's entertaining because it's smart people using their brains to get out of stuff, and the Saw films generally aren't. This one doesn't even give them enough time to be smart.
And there's nothing to be that smart about.
They're never going to escape.
There's nothing to be that smart about. Like the thing,
it's just a choice.
Yes, exactly.
Do I want to live or do I want to not live?
Yeah.
There is no puzzle here.
And that's the, Andrew, you mentioned how predictable you felt like any of the twists in this were, and you're so dead on with that, at least for me, in that this is one of the strangest things. I don't even know that we need to do a spoiler cast on this. And how do you do a Saw movie where you don't even need to talk about the spoilers to talk about the movie? Like that's really frustrating. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
The twist is so telegraphed.
It is.
It is so telegraphed. There is no one, there's no one else it can be.
Uh-huh.
The twist of.
Yeah.
There isn't.
And that reveal is really the only twisty thing the movie tries to do, too. So, I don't know. There's nothing to it.
We all knew.
It's very shallow in that way.
It's paint by numbers, but it uses somehow the wrong colors. Even though it's got the colors right in front of them, it still mixes them up. It's like, oh, that's a one and a one. Well, we got green and we got blue. Cool, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is the all the wrong lessons thing. I think you mentioned that, Ian. You know, I think there is also something about this franchise that has become mired in, we've got to do grosser and grosser things, darker and darker things. You know, it's always got to be about dismemberment or, you know, whatever the case may be. And it's like, look, the first Saw movie wasn't successful because he cut his leg off. That's not why that movie was successful, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, and so you're taking the wrong lesson. Like, it's not the dismemberment that made that movie good.
Yeah.
It's
so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, you haven't even told us what you thought about the first Saw movie yet. Like, did you like it?
Sure. I didn't, but mainly because I liked the stuff we're talking about. And we have talked, I think, many times about gore is just, it's one of those things that feels, and this is the only word I know how to use in that it communicates what I'm trying to say. It feels pornographic to me in many ways. In other words, it feels to appeal to this really base part of our violent nature that I'm not, it doesn't appeal to me in that way. So there is that element of the original Saw film that just feels so full of darkness that, or gore or grotesqueness, as it were, that it just, my needle goes like this, where it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting, but I didn't need to see that.
No, I don't need that.
Yeah. Yeah. So in fact, there's, you know, the one sentence review of the Saw movies for me would, if I had to see them all, probably would be, I didn't need to see that. That would probably be my one sentence review. But yeah, it's so, I did not like it. However, I did see why people do, and I do think it's a smarter movie than this one is, and then I assume the other Saw movies are. I have not seen those. It's doing some interesting things. But like I said, you know what? And that's maybe why I like Escape Room more than most, because it has that stuff, but it's not about the gore, even as it's about the tension and about the kills or whatever. It's not about them being grotesque or showing things that, you know, are ultra violent or those kind of ideas.
Well, with the first movie, you have that centralized location. So since you're stuck in that room with these guys, you get to invoke that detective element of your mind where you're looking around the room with them. And you're trying to solve the puzzle. Where in this one, I'm going into it thinking, oh, I'm following the detective. I'm going to get to try and solve this with the detective. Maybe he's going to pick up on things I don't. Or maybe I'm going to pick up on things he's missing. But everybody's so dumb in this movie that it's... And also, they don't give the audience time to try... Not that there is a puzzle to solve. Like you, it was like you said, do you want to die or do you not want to die? You know, there's no puzzle to this movie. And that is the thing everybody loves about the first Saw movie, is the puzzle element. How are they going to get out? Let me see if I can figure out how to get out of this before they do. Let me see if I can solve this before they do. That's how you feed breadcrumbs and, you know, cheese and goodies to the audience, where you want to get them, you know, coming back for more. Like, oh, I'm gonna solve this puzzle. It's exciting, you know. But at the same time, you feel the tension of there are stakes here if I don't solve this in time, you know. Not for me, but for this guy.
And that makes it better on a rewatch as well, because it gives you a chance to pick up those clues again and think, you know what? The film laid it all out in front of me. I just didn't quite get there. And that's, this film isn't worth rewatching. Our Jigsaw in this film, in inverted commas, lays it right out in front of us. He says, you bring me the cops and I'll kill them. It just puts it in front of you. It's like, there is no attempt to get out of this. There is no puzzle. Yeah. They are just going to die.
Inverted commas. Is that quotation marks?
Oh, wait.
Is that
quotation marks?
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, that might be an English thing. Sorry.
No, I just wanted to make sure, because you said Jigsaw in inverted commas, and I was like, oh, quotation marks.
What?
Quotation marks. I get it. That was a more fun puzzle than this entire movie. Was me figuring
out.
You got
it.
I got it.
You got it. Well done. You get to live. Aaron, Andrew, sorry, you die.
Oh, I would definitely die in a Saw.
I also think there are some of these quote unquote puzzles that are not puzzles. Let's just say contraptions, machines, whatever.
Did you mean inverted commas?
Yes, I did. That aren't even clear what's really going on. There's one involving glass that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Like, I get the idea behind it, but it's like, what is he supposed to do? What are you trying to figure out from that? Like, oh, this would be cool. Let's see if we can show this, because the actual setting up of it, which would have taken ages to set up, is not worth any kind of payoff that is unclear what the payoff would be. Like, you know, it's ridiculous.
The traps themselves used to be metaphors, and the film starts with it. The tongue trap is, I'm not going to say it's clever, but it
is. It's at least metaphorical.
It's reflective. Yeah, it's reflective of why that person is in the trap. Later on in the film, it's just like, yeah, no, that's cool. Let's do that. You're right. There's no meaning behind them.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for a movie that actually shows a jigsaw trap that doesn't work. Like, he had one bolt that wasn't tightened all the way, and then it just throws off everything else. And
no, that happens.
Wait, it does?
It does happen in one of the it's because it's not Jigsaw that makes the trap, it's somebody else, and they botch it. I'm not saying it's worth watching all of the films, because I can't even tell you which one it was, but something along those lines does happen.
That's interesting.
Not executed as fun as you'd think.
Any final thoughts on this from either of you?
Please don't watch it.
Yeah, it's not. It's definitely not
actually. Ian, you're the apparently you're the horror guy. So
no, don't do that. I'm not
compared to Aaron. And
yes,
I,
yeah, of the three of us
perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess your recommendation, whether or not you think this is a worthy horror film, would hold way more weight than what we'd have to say.
Don't watch it. I have two final thoughts, which, sorry, I'm going to break the rules. Did anybody know or get a attempt at Tarantino feel at the beginning with Chris Rock talking about Forrest Gump and
there's a little
the
bit of that,
random
yeah.
conversations? It's kind of, so the chap that made this film has made three other Saw films. Or directed three other Saw films. So he's kind of, it felt like he's being extremely self-indulgent. And you know what? I'm going to have a bit of a play here. And just didn't work.
And it didn't carry, work. And it didn't really carry through with that character either. You know, it was,
doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, there was one more moment in the car where he kind of got a little, you know, when he was talking about relationships and that kind of stuff. It was a little more, like, it was just, it felt to me like, here's a chance for Chris Rock to do some stand-up. That's what it felt like to me.
100%. It was dragging in some Chris Rock stand-up.
Yeah.
I can end on a positive, and that is that the theme tune just absolutely got me. So even though the crescendo at the end of this film doesn't deserve the bum bum bum,
yeah,
it was still there and it gave me tingles. And I was like, no, don't enjoy this. This is bad. Bum, bum, bum,
you
bum.
Can't use my nostalgia against me.
Yeah, how dare you?
How dare you? Very nice. The movie is Spiral. It is in theaters. We didn't like it,
sadly.
So we don't think you should see it.
Nope.
All right, let's move on to The Woman in the Window.
This is a safe place. I'm agoraphobic. I can't go outside. I've been slipping, getting into a really dark frame of mind.
So what's the latest on the street?
Your neighbor, she's become a friend.
Her name is Jane Russell.
Do you want to go outside? You know, I have a shrink of my own.
Agoraphobic Dr. Anna Fox witnesses something she shouldn't while keeping tabs on the Russell family, the seemingly picture-perfect clan that lives across the way. This is Amy Adams, Julianne Moore, Gary Oldman, Wyatt Russell, and Anthony Mackie. Making a return together, Falcon and not Captain America coming together. By Brian Tyree Henry, Tracy Letts wrote this and is in it as well. Jennifer Jason Leigh showing up here too. Big cast, lots of interesting stuff going on. Directed by Joe Wright. There's certainly some talented names involved here. It's on Netflix. What did you guys think of Woman in the Window? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, you start this time.
Hey, guys. What if we made Rear Window but bad? I'm going to go with I didn't like it. Close to okay, but I didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, Ian?
I'm firmly in liked it.
Okay.
I liked it.
Great. I'm firmly in didn't liked it. Sounds like I liked it the least of the three of us. Ian, sounds like you liked it the most. So why don't you start? What are some of the things you liked about The Woman in the Window?
I mean, there's some themes that are right there that are really worth talking about. But I really, really enjoyed the way this film was shot in particular. There is some stuff that they do with the camera work and some shots in particular. So the kitchen and the car is probably enough to not spoil anything. That... I thought was fantastic. Maybe it was taking the metaphor a bit too far, but just the way they show anxiety and just how difficult that can be. And I think the film does a great job of putting you in Anna, the character's shoes. Felt a little bit like the father in that respect of it's tricky. I can see why people wouldn't like it, but I personally think it does a really good job of showing that.
Nice. Andrew, what about you? What are some of your general thoughts?
Well, I do think that Amy Adams does give a pretty good performance in this movie. The way that she is able to fully realize this character is impressive, because doing a character like this in agoraphobic, you know, it can be difficult. Well, because there has to be more to the character than just a symptom. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think that she does a really good job of humanizing this making her care about, you know, what she used to do, like, as a psychologist and stuff like that, you really feel that, like, that need, that you feel a need to protect while at the same time being feeling trapped by an illness. I think that she does a really good job with that performance. There are some elements, like you say, with the way this movie is shot. Like you said, there's an element with a car that I thought was, ooh, I like the way that that was shot. That was beautiful. Yeah. There are a lot of beautiful shots in this. Switching to cons real quick, before we, just still in general. The payoff for this movie is unwarranted and undeserving.
That I totally agree with. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
The ending kept me back from loving it. I was kind of in loved it right up until your third act, and then it just lost me.
We all had a similar experience, but like a varying degree, like a different starting point. I was okay with this movie for most of it. I was like, okay, all right. I'm not having a great time, but you know, the performances are all right. I get what it's trying to do here. And then that last 20 minutes happened or whatever it is, and I was just like, no, this movie's terrible. I was like,
it changes genre.
It really
it
does.
Entirely changes genre.
Yeah.
For no good reason at all. And some of the choices, insulting as well.
Yeah, totally. Some of the choices it makes in that last 20 minutes is just like, was this the movie you thought you were the whole time? Like,
yes. I miss something
here? Yeah. Did you really think this is what we were doing? Like, you know, it's really strange. Really strange, some of the choices it makes. You know, there's a. Yeah, yeah. Gardening tools, man. Gardening tools. I'm just saying.
Oh, no need.
I'm just saying. No need. Like, yeah. I'm just saying. That's not the movie this was for the vast majority of it. That's not the movie this was, and it's just it's just strange to me the choices that are made down the end. It's funny, Andrew, that you mentioned the Rear Window thing. That was actually literally my Letterboxd review. Was it's like someone watched Rear Window and went, "What if this?" But super confusing.
Actually, what's the movie with Shia LaBeouf? It's not where he's
Disturbia. Yeah,
that's a better movie than this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it realized from the get go what kind of movie it wanted to be.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, Disturbia. I really like Disturbia. I think that's a good watch. If you want,
but I think there's a really easy way to fix this film, to make it like that, make it more consistent. There is just a really, you can't get into it without spoilers, obviously, but there is a simple change you can make that I think rescues the ending.
I'm interested to hear it. I think we will do a SIF spoil on this one because there are some things that happen towards the end. The movie wants its twist moments, and okay, fine, have them, but you know, so we'll talk about
seven.
We'll talk about those in the. In the SIF spoil, but there's plenty of talk to talk about without spoiling this. One of which is the confusion for me, which was a big deal to me because I understand unreliable narrator. I understand the idea of the audience can choose what to believe about what they're being shown and about what's happening and who it's coming from. But this movie to me seemed really inconsistent in the way it would lead you towards what you were supposed to believe or what you weren't supposed to believe. The movie is doing some purposeful confusion here that I just don't think is necessary and kind of undermines, you know, what it wants to do overall. And for me, I got to the end and I was just like, okay, I think I can piece together what the story is. But you didn't give me the pieces in a way that made that an attractive journey for me. So, yeah.
Aaron, back in 2016, you and I had reviewed a movie called The Girl on the Train. Do you remember that, the Emily Blunt movie?
I do, yes.
This feels a lot like that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Not with the similar titles, you know, Woman in the Window, Girl on a Train, stuff like that.
Sure, yeah.
The Female on Something, you know. But it's a...
Classic, but classic that, Hollywood but genre.
But it's that, you know, that unreliable narrator, you know, and it's an unreliable narrator that is not portrayed in a way that proves that the narrator is unreliable, yet is still cohesive and understanding for the audience to go along with. I mean, that's a very hard thing to do. I think that's why I gave The Father last year such high props, because, you know, Anthony Hopkins is such an unreliable narrator, but at the same time, we as the audience know and understand exactly what is going on with that character and what's going on with the movie.
Yes.
It's very difficult, but if you don't think you can do it, don't attempt it.
Yeah, that's a great comparison to make, Andrew. The Father is such a look at how to do this correctly, where the confusion is intentional, but you know very early on how to interpret it. You know what I mean? Like the movie isn't hiding stuff from you so that you have no foundation. You have confusion on top of foundation, and that is such a better journey than just confusion on top of no foundation. And yeah, no, that the Father is a great thing to compare to this. And the last 20 minutes of the Father doesn't involve garden tools. So, you know, like there's that as well.
As well, it shouldn't. For me, I actually, I was okay with the confusion. And I think, I don't know, it might be personal experience, but I understood where it was going, and I'm not going to say happy to sit in it, because that is the wrong adjective entirely, but I was okay sitting in it and understanding that this is how anxiety works, and this is, you can question everything. You can have that need for repetition, and the gaslighting in this film is on another level, and the amount of victim blaming as well. And I had just, for some reason, went into the film with the faith that it was all going to be explained at the end. And it is.
Ish.
But perhaps not ish. Yeah, it is. And that's exactly why I'm where I am in liked it. It didn't bug me as much as I think it bugged you, but I totally get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I just think the movie could have done more subtly or not subtly to help the audience find a foundation of how to interpret the confusion. And I don't know that ruins anything they were trying to do, really. Like, you don't want to have to say, what ruins is it if you have to say, like, this is real, this is not. This is real, this is not. Like, you don't want that.
Really telegraph it. Do a spiral.
But there are, the beauty of the best movies that have a big story turn at the end is you want to immediately rewatch them because you have new information that unlocks the puzzle that you were, you know, watching before. And this movie just doesn't really have that, you know. The key piece of information it gives you is just like, yeah, but it doesn't unlock like why this was this or this was this. I don't want to give details because I don't necessarily want to spoil, but you know, there are identical moments, some of which are eventually revealed to be foundational and some are revealed to be not foundational. And it's like they're identical in the way they're presented. They're identical in how we experience them. So there's a muddledness to it that's difficult for me. I don't know that I have a ton more to really say about this outside of spoilers. If you guys do, feel free. We'll chat about it a little bit more. I think we mentioned, did we talk about performances? Yeah, we mentioned Amy Adams is doing
Amy
good work
Adams,
here.
But I think that she's the only one really worth mentioning. Gary Oldman's wasted here. So is Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
What a weird choice. There's no reason for that to be Julianne Moore at all.
Yeah. Except she wants to work.
Like, yeah, well, yeah.
You know what? Hey, sorry. Who am I to tell an actor that they're too good for a part?
What are you doing working for a living? How dare you?
That's right.
Shame on you.
There's no reason for this podcast to be made by Aaron. Somebody else could make this podcast. I want to do it. But I know what you're saying.
There is no replacing you.
I know what you're saying. It does feel like Oldman and Moore are both in a situation here where I think there was a moment where probably the general idea of making this movie is that it would be an awards contender of some sort. You know, like that's the only thing I can kind of think,
doesn't it?
Yeah, because you've got a lot of names that kind of go down that road, and you know the parts are there. Amy's always in the conversation for awards, and you know, certainly Gary and Julianne are as well. So yeah, you get the sense it's like, you know, that there's maybe some supporting actor kind of thoughts possible here, but not in the way it's presented. I mean, there's just not enough. There's not enough Oldman or not enough.
Enough for him to grab onto. Yeah. To be honest, it's pretty. It had a chance of being more, but it's pretty two dimensional.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I don't think a single character in this movie is fully realized. I think that they are plot devices or are just a kind of a trope, I guess you could say. I don't even know if trope is the right word. But like David, which is the person I'm really thinking of, is just, he's there to, you know, push forward the story just a little bit. And, you know, you have the plot device neighbors, I'm just going to call. But they're not, they don't seem like people, you know? They don't seem like people. Mm-hmm. They're what Amy Adams needs to move the movie forward. They're not, it's a shame.
Yeah. The female police officer in particular isn't a real person. Like, I couldn't, she took me right out of the movie.
Yeah, she didn't need to be there. It could have been,
she didn't need to be like that either.
Yeah.
Am I missing any kind of underlying metaphor here that the movie plays with in its structure? Or like, because I don't see any way this movie actually deals with its content subtextually. Like the idea of anxiety and agoraphobia, there could be some interesting ways to deal with that subtextually, where like she's, you know, in the same way that we talk about, what was the movie that dealt with dementia? That was a horror movie, a Relic. In the same way that Relic really starts to amp up its metaphor, you know, as it goes on, there are some ways I think you could have seen this do that. And I don't know that it did, but maybe I missed it.
Something that Relic did very well, and I think they could have taken that element and implemented it into this movie, is turn the house into a character. If she wants to be in this place forever, make it feel like there's a comfort,
sure,
you know, to this house, but there isn't. It feels void and barren and just
bordering on a haunted house.
Yeah, bordering on a haunted house. Which, by the way, they say she lives in Manhattan. That's a three-story.
Yeah, she's a trillionaire.
Yeah, how expensive is that house? That has got to be a multi-million dollar.
There's mold. There's mold. So, you know, that brings
the mold. I forgot there's mold.
Yeah. Crucial plot device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't say that there's necessarily metaphors, but there are some definite triggers that I spotted and appreciated. So every time that Anna wakes up, it's very sudden. There is no routine of I'm going to go to bed now. So it's hard to interpret if what we just saw was a dream or if there was a blackout. It's just bam, waking up next day. And that was something that was consistent throughout the film. And the reaching for the phone as well. And then totally freaking out when the phone is lost. And that's her security blanket. So I more appreciated the little tells and the little nods to anxiety rather than the consequences overall. I think that, I think you're right. That could have been done way, way better.
Well, that is The Woman at the Window. That is on Netflix. It is not a recommend from me, but sounds like, I mean, if you already have Netflix, it sounds like there's enough there maybe from Ian that he might say, go ahead and check it out if you're already paying for Netflix.
If I was recommending it to myself, I would. I don't know if I'd recommend it to anyone else because it's a weird recommend. It's an odd one.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. But before we do that, just a reminder that if you want to be a SIFPOP member, you can. That happens at Patreon, patreon.com/SIFPOP. Want to let you know we are reinstituting the monthly hangouts at SIFPOP. So if you want to be a member, those will be happening again. Doing some fun stuff in the tiers as well, including content that is ad-free for you if you are there, and some other fun stuff. If you want to check it out, you can go to patreon.com/siftpop and check it all out, and as well as the bonus episodes that show up in your podcast feed too. So again, thank you to our current members. We really do appreciate you. Thank you for believing in us and wanting us to keep doing this. And if you're interested in being part of that crew, just head to the patreon.com/siftpop link, and that'll get you all set up. All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. We've got best ever W movies. So we are going to do best ever movies that start with the letter W. Now, obviously, in a category like this, it's a fairly wide range of films. I have kept mine to like my all-time favorites. There are certainly great movies that I will not have on my list. All the ones I will mention, including my honorable mentions, are actually in my top 200 movies of all time. So that's, you know, that's what happens sometimes with these wide categories. But we'll have a good time. We'll go number 5 to number 1. And if you've got something higher than somebody who mentions it before you, make sure you trump it so that you can talk about it when it's the highest on your list. So whoever's got it highest gets to start the conversation when we get there. Let's see. Ian, why don't you kick us off? What's your number 5?
I'm so excited to do this, by the way. Number 5, I've got The Warriors.
Oh, nice. Come out to play, yay!
This film, man, this is one of my early, early film memories. Probably sure. earlier, not probably, definitely earlier than I should have been allowed to watch it. it's just a movie I watch with my dad once a year. It's one of the most unique films I've ever watched. I think it's brilliant. I think it's just, it's such a good film.
This is on my list of shame. I've only seen bits and pieces of it.
I don't know why that makes me happy.
I've seen a movie you haven't.
Yes.
I've heard good things. It's just, you know, I just haven't gotten around to checking this one out. So, Andrew, have you seen
it? I don't think you'd like it. I don't think you'd like
okay.
it.
Oh, okay. I probably will see it eventually. Andrew, have you seen The Warriors?
A list of shame as well.
Yeah.
But I have seen the clip come out to play. Yay.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a touchstone. It's it that scene in particular is fantastic. And it has one of the best non-vehicular chase scenes ever put to film, in my opinion.
Nice. Andrew, what do you got at number 5?
I'm going to go with the Taylor Sheridan movie, which I was really upset we were not reviewing his new movie this week.
That'll be next week. That'll be next week.
It will?
Yes.
Okay. But for this time right here in the Best Ever Challenge, I'm talking about Wind River.
Ah, yeah.
Honorable mention. Nearly made my list.
What? My favorite? Is this my favorite Taylor Sheridan movie?
No.
I think it is. I like it more than Hell or High Water.
Wow. Hell or High Water is so good. I guess I like this movie. I think this movie's really well done. I just didn't like it as much as you did, I think.
No, this movie hit me like at the perfect time. I don't know. It was just the perfect chemistry between these two Avengers and the story that they are you know, in. Aaron, or actually both of you, have either of you guys watched Yellowstone yet?
No, I haven't gotten around to watching it.
It is on my I have such a long list of TV things I need to watch.
Yeah. It's super good. You can definitely...
I believe it is good. Everybody tells me it's good. I have such a hard time starting dramas. I just like, when I want to watch TV, I want reality junk. I want sitcom laughs. Like, I get enough drama in my movie watching that I just think, like, for TV, it's just like, I don't know if I want to watch, you know, Costner Western for hours and hours and hours and hours. Because then it feels like, you know, like a, you know, 20-hour movie. And I'm just like, I'm not ready for that.
Heavy.
Yeah.
enough people have recommended it to me that I trust that I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, apparently he didn't even direct Hell or High Water. He just wrote it.
Correct.
Yeah. I thought he directed that one, too. I mean, the guy has written a lot of stuff like Sicario, Hell or High Water, all those goodies. But this Wind River, I think, is just the way that, you know, it brings in the element of the life on the reservation and how hard that is and, you know, suppression, stuff like that. On top of a murder mystery, I think that this just hits all the right notes for me.
Yeah, it's really good. I think it is absolutely a fine choice for number five. All right, my number five is Wonder Woman 1984. Just kidding.
No, it is not. Just get out of town. Kidding.
That's just trolling Danae, who is watching right now. So no, my number five is Waiting for Guffman.
I love it.
This movie is so much fun, and I don't know how many of the Christopher Guest movies you have seen. Back when he was absolutely nailing these improv movies, it's great. And of course, Spinal Tap is kind of the first in that series, although that is technically that's a Reiner movie, not Christopher Guest. But, you know, you've got Best in Show, you've got, you know, all that crew there. But Waiting for Guffman was kind of one of those first ones that I was like, oh, this is fun. This is really fun stuff. So highly recommend it.
Every character, it's a character film.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm just going to go home and bite my pillow.
It's so good.
He's a lovable character, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely wonderful. So yeah, Waiting for Guffman is my number five. All right, number fours. What do you got, Ian?
I will be shocked if I don't get trumped on this one, but Wall-E.
Yeah, yeah, you're definitely getting trumped on that one.
Yeah, it wasn't even worth mentioning, so go on. Move along.
Andrew, what's your number four?
I'm going with, this one might get trumped, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Not by me.
List of shame. I just cannot commit to, it's like 7.5 hours long, I just cannot commit to that.
It feels like it. I know why people don't like this movie, and especially I know why somebody like Aaron doesn't like this movie, because it's the glorification of the lifestyle that
it can feel that way.
Shouldn't be glorifying.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's such a wild ride to see, like, this happened. There are people out there like this, that is what I find intriguing about this movie. Like, I can't believe that there's somebody out there who is this obsessed with money or this power hungry or stuff like that. And then at the same time, you have this element, which I'll just quickly touch on, of, you know, the Kyle Chandler element of this movie. Like, I'm going to get you. Like, the power of law versus the power of money. Which is more powerful, you know? And it's interesting. You have that scene with them on the yacht, like, when they're going back and back, like, I'm gonna get you. He's like, no, you're not. It's a very different yet very similar to in Heat when you have De Niro and Pacino sitting across from each other in that diner, and they're just like, oh, we're not so different, you and I. You know how they're both, you know, they're standing for something. It's a fun movie. It's bananas.
I think one of the other things is the performances in this are so intoxicating. Leo is so incredible in this. Jonah Hill, right? Jonah Hill is incredible in this. Kyle Chandler, you mentioned. Yeah, that scene with Leo and Kyle on the yacht is just, I mean, it's captivating stuff. So I totally get it.
Yeah.
I get why people love this movie. So yeah, there you go. Wolf of Wall Street in it. Andrew's number four. My number four is Wreck-It Ralph. I love this movie. I think Wreck-It Ralph is slowly becoming underrated. I think it is so fun. Lots of interesting, like, Easter egg type video game things that are fun to see, but don't, like, take away or dominate, you know, the story and what's going on. I love the themes here of, you know, what it means to be labeled, what it means to be thought of in a certain way, and how hard it is to break out of that, to find community. Lots of really great stuff here. Great performances, lots of fun. Wreck-It Ralph is my number four. On to our number threes. Ian, what do you got at number three?
I don't know if this counts, so I have an alternate just in case. But... and it's to do with the length, really. It is a movie, Wallace and Gromit and the Wrong Trousers.
You can count it. Listen, I'm never going to keep you from not counting Wallace and Gromit. And what's interesting is it counts on the Wallace and Gromit and the Wrong Trousers part. So you've got it. Yeah. You've got it either way.
The whole way through. I love this movie. I mean, I love Wallace and Gromit. Yeah, I drink tea and call Blimey Governor, yes. But I am the stereotype. I love Wallace and Gromit. This is... I think easily the best of all of the films. It has a great little plot. It's hilarious. It has a lot of heart with Gromit being rejected by his only family. It has a great chase scene. Just the laying down the tracks.
So and good.
While he's on the thing. And I mean, yeah, it's physically impossible, but he does it. And man, that is just... It's just paced so well and put together, that final chase scene. It's fantastic. I love it. It's hilarious. I will watch it every day for the rest of my life.
Yep. Wrong Trousers is great. Is it your favorite Wallace and Gromit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Very nice choice.
Never seen a single movie.
Get out.
You should, man. You'd really enjoy them. It's, you know, there's so much great physical comedy in them. It's great.
I love like a Chicken Run and those type of. There's no reason why I should not have seen, you know, Wallace and Gromit yet. So
yeah,
it's just one of those things.
Very similar humor.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see. So we're on to
my number three.
Your number three. What is it?
Warrior.
Ah.
Not the Warriors. Just Warrior.
Yes, good choice. Yeah. Good choice.
Which, it's one of my favorite sports movies of all time. The elements between Joel Edgerton and Tom Hardy, it's amazing. Nick Nolte gives a career best performance in this movie. This movie's so freaking good. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, Warrior's great. Have you seen it, Ian?
Yeah, I have. It's brilliant. Honorable mention.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's great.
For sure. All right. That brings me to my number three. My number three is What About Bob? Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss. This movie is... If Groundhog Day didn't exist, this would be my favorite Bill Murray movie. And yes, that's above Ghostbusters. That's above all the other things that many people... love him
for. It's above
for.
Garfield?
It's above Garfield. I know.
Wow.
Yeah, this movie is just so much fun. And I think this is one of those movies that builds in such an, it has such an appropriate build to where it's just crazy by the end, like what is happening, but you believe it because of the build of this character and the effect that he's having on his... new counselor, psychiatrist, and their family. So, this is so much fun. This is so much fun.
I think you and I, Aaron, we've recently had a discussion about how you really couldn't make What About Bob in today's world.
No, like, I don't think you could.
Yeah, because it's almost not a mockery, but it's an insensitive way of talking about mental illness and stuff.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Think you. I think you. I think you would get taken to task for the Murray, you know, representation of his agoraphobia, his, you know, anxiety, those kind of things, being a little cartoonish, all that kind of stuff. Strangely enough, though, it's not mean spirited at all. In fact, the movie is very much loves this character and, you know, wants him to figure it out and succeed. And, you know, by the time you get to death therapy at the end, you know, you're just like, oh, it makes complete sense. So, yeah.
Get away from my sister.
Listening to you guys talk about the film, having not seen it and with no context, I have no idea what's going on and I want to watch it.
You should, man. Tell me if I'm wrong, Andrew. This almost has a little bit of that British sense of humor to it, right? There's a little bit of that kind of like dryness.
It's not quite Monty Python, but right. You can feel the silliness of it all.
Yeah.
In good-natured silliness.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have the the straight man, you know. I know what you're saying, yeah.
There are a few movies I quote as much as this one as well. You know, there's just so many quotes that have made its way into, you know, daily life. Like, you know, I'll be quiet, I'll be peace.
I'll be peace. Oh, I love it so much.
I'm sailing. I sail. I'm a sailor. Like, there's just so much in this movie that's just, is that corn hand shucked? There's just like line after line that just comes to me in my daily life. Yeah. So yeah, Ian, high recommend. Knock it up that watch list for sure.
Yeah.
What About Bob is my number three. All right, number two.
Whiplash.
That's going to be trumped.
I guessed it would be. Yeah. I nearly trumped myself by moving it, but that sounds weird. But yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do that. Andrew, what's your number two?
This is where I have Wally.
Me as well. I have Wally at number two as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can go ahead.
You can both be wrong. It's fine.
So Wally was number two for me and for Andrew. And Ian, you had it at number four. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
So on all of our lists, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a little bit of Wallace and Gromit here, too, in that like it's got that physical humor, that no dialogue for the first, you know, 20 minutes of the movie kind of thing, and it pulls it off so well, and you just fall deeply in love with this little robot and what he's doing. And as this robot falls deeply in love with this mysterious stranger from the sky, and it's so good. So good.
Put googly eyes on anything and it's immediately filmed. Yeah. Put them on a carrot, put them on anything, and you got yourself a movie.
Sure.
What's amazing about Wally is that he lives in a world of destruction, you know, yet in this world of just trash and grossness, he finds beauty. And that's really what makes you fall in love with this character, is his optimism and purity, because he doesn't know any better. This is just the world he's lived in forever. So for us to look at it and go, oh, look at all this trash and garbage, and we did this to our planet, he's going around like, oh, look at this, this is pretty. When he finds the case, it has the ring in it, he throws away the ring and he's like, oh, look at this little case, it's got a little mouth to it. You know, it's stuff like that. And then you go back to his home and he just has, you know, the conveyor belt of his treasures, you know. It's such a pure movie. And I say that not only because of his, you know, emotions, but also, like Aaron said, the dialogue. It's a movie that is driven solely by emotion. I guarantee you, if you were to look at the script for this movie, it would just be a whole bunch of Wally, 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 Eva, 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 Wally, Wally, Eva, Eva, Wally, Eva, Eva, Wally. You know?
You got yourself a song.
Until you get to the people, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, I have massive amounts of respect for a film that can convey that with such little dialogue, and yeah, convey so much emotion through something that isn't human as well. It's great. I love it.
All right, we're to our number ones. Andrew's and I are obvious, but Ian, what is yours?
It should be fairly obvious. It is The Wrath of Khan. I dropped the Star Trek prefix.
Oh, you did.
Sorry.
You did.
I hope that's okay. If not, I don't care. Oh, it's still at the top.
I'll accept it.
Yeah, yeah. Man, this movie. It's not my favorite Star Trek movie, but it's my favorite W movie. It's chef's kiss. It's perfect.
It is the Star Trek movie I watched growing up. And when I say the, I literally mean the. I didn't see any of the other Star Trek movies until I was much older. But for whatever reason, we had a VHS of this, and I wore the snot out of it. I sat there transfixed by the ear creatures and this,
the buttony bay.
yes. I really have a soft spot in my heart for this one.
Drew's talking about the whales. Wasn't it in three?
The one with the whales is three. Four. Sorry, that's the Voyage Home.
Yeah, Search for Spock is
after this. Search for Spock is three. That's right. Yeah. I know it's way down the line in Next Generation, but Nemesis was always one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah. I enjoyed Nemesis as well.
Yes, the final of the TNG films. And it's the most hated Star Trek film, Nemesis, but I like it. Well, the one with the Borg is First Contact. I'm just going to know
I thought Nemesis was Borg as... Oh, wait, no, you're absolutely right.
Nemesis is Romulans and Remans, and First Contact is the number two Star Trek film for me. It's great. That's the Borg.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of is First Contact then.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought that one was Nemesis.
They're both very green. Like the posters are green. The tone is very green, so I can see the confusion.
Yeah. Oh man, I love Star Trek.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Ian, are you an original series or are you a next gen?
Everything. I'm plugging it into my brains. The original series is unwatchable, and I will not recommend it. But I love it. But yeah, all of Star Trek. Just get it inside me. Love it.
Do you watch The Orville?
Yes. Now, we could totally do a detour here and go off onto all sorts of things. I really like The Orville.
Yeah.
I'm not an Orville basher.
So do Aaron and I. We love The Orville.
I think it's great. I think it's doing what Star Trek Discovery can't do. And I think it's plugging a hole that us Trekkies absolutely need so that Discovery can go off and do its new things and get the new audience. And then leave us old people to enjoy The Orville.
Well, and then you've got Lower Decks coming back here pretty soon, too. I don't know if you checked out Star Trek Lower Decks, but...
Yes, of course I did.
That's a lot of fun.
I still need to pick that one up.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah, it's much more Orville. It will just, again, tap into, that's a reference, but it's got some good stories.
Yeah, it's animated Orville with more explicit references.
Yes.
So, and by explicit...
I'm down with that.
By explicit, I mean clear, not
adults. not vulgarity.
Yes, yeah.
There's a few.
There's a little bit of that as well. Yeah. All right, time for our number one, Andrew. We've got Whiplash here. Ian had it at number two. It's safe to say if we had to pick one together, it would be this one. At the top.
Yeah.
Such a great movie, Andrew. Crazy enough, I think you like this movie more than I do.
It's my number three movie of all time.
Yeah. So why don't you kick us off with just some thoughts on Whiplash? I mean, we've said it all before, but go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I think that Whiplash is technically the best movie ever made. I think on a technical standpoint, I think it's the best movie ever made. Performances, perfect. Story, perfect. Cinematography, perfect. Pacing, perfect. Everything about this movie is perfect. I mean, J.K. Simmons is one of the best movie villains ever, and he's a band teacher. it's insane.
You're not wrong.
No, when this movie comes down to that final drum solo, it's one of the, and they both look at each other. And they give themselves each other that nod. It's crazy because you don't know if Miles Tellers is now a villain in this movie. If he has drank the Kool-Aid and it's some weird form of Stockholm Syndrome where he's like, you're right, in order to be the best, I have to put myself through whatever you're putting me through. Because that's what the greats before me did, and the audience, we're all just going, no, everything that J.K. Simmons is doing is horrible and wrong. But I guarantee in the back of everybody's mind, there's a little bit of us that are going, he's horrible, but are his methods without a proof of concept?
It's such a sneaky conundrum movie, right? Like, we talk about conundrum movies where you walk out thinking about, you know, the choices that are made and are they ethical and are they moral? And you think about it for a long time. This is not a movie because it's so good, because the story's so good and it's so well done. You don't necessarily walk out of it thinking it's a conundrum movie, but it sticks with you in that way.
It does.
Because honestly, at the end, like if you think about it, as far as winners or losers, you don't know who won. Who won the movie? And it's like, maybe both. I don't know.
I think they both no one. Did.
Yeah, or no one. Yeah, like
the way I took the ending, and this is just for my own headcanon, is that Miles Taylor did that. It was a massive screw you, and then he never plays the drums again. And then that's really it. So I can see how, yeah, maybe he goes on to be a teacher and falls into the same ways as J.K. Simmons, but I imagine that that's it. I'm done. I will never play the drums again. That was enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a perfect ending. It's such a perfect ending. Beautiful. You know, I comb through that movie sometimes, like I do with movies I love this much, and say, okay, what is wrong with this movie? Like, where is a choice that might have I made different? The only thing I've ever been able to think about with this movie is that at times it borders on the unbelievable. There are moments of some of the things that happen towards the end that I don't necessarily buy in the real world. But that is such a silly thing to knock a movie for that's doing what this movie is doing. And so it doesn't land
in
any meaningful...
Like, what in particular are you...
What's that?
Like, what in particular do you find...
The accident.
Because I'm having...
Getting away from that in the way that he does and finding a way to make... Like, you know, it's just...
I think it's great for the movie.
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
It is great for the movie. It's perfect. It's perfect for the movie. Yeah. I'm just saying in like, okay, I'm going to put on my reality glasses and go, you know, okay, does this really happen this way? Probably not, but who cares? Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is that is the closest I get to finding flaw with this movie, and it's not really that close.
Whether it's right or wrong, not my tempo, is something I use every damn day. I was like, Ian, can you come and taste this? It's good. It's not my tempo.
That moment. Where he turns from being supportive to like
as soon as he throws that chair.
Let's just try it again. Let's just try it. And the whole time he's planning to destroy this man. The whole time that's his plan. And it's just
because the scene before he's out with him in the hallway and he's like, what's your home life like? He's like, oh, yeah, my mom left, you know, we're just living with my dad. He's like, hey, you know, all those guys in there, they're all worried about how they're going to do and stuff. You just worry about you. And if you worry about you, you got this, man. You got this. And then they go back inside, and he's like, it's okay. It's not quite my tempo. It's not my tempo. Yeah. But, you know, let's try it again.
Oh,
and
then
it's
filled
to the chair. He's like, why do you think I threw that chair at you? And he just goes off and he uses everything that he just learned about him. Oh, my gosh, J.K. Simmons, you horrible monster teacher man.
I feel like the three of us like this movie. I feel like
a little bit.
I feel like we enjoy this movie.
Which feels a bit bad because it is a horrible, horrible story about a horrible, problematic man.
Yeah,
but we love it.
Yeah, yeah, but not quite not quite as much as Wrath of Khan. It's a much better film.
But come on. He's rightfully. This is SETI Alpha 5.
Okay, you convinced me. all right, let's talk about honorable mentions. I'll go ahead and throw my three out, and then if I miss some that you guys have, because like I said, I really only went with my best ever. I did want to mention.
Oh, no, I got all of them. All of the W's.
Every W mention is going to happen here. I wanted to go with classics Wizard of Oz and West Side Story. I really love both of those.
Yeah.
I definitely think those are worth mentioning. And then one that not many people would mention, but is one of my favorite movies of all time, What Lies Beneath, is a really great Hitchcockian thriller that I enjoy. And so I wanted to throw that out there. I don't think it gets enough love. So What Lies Beneath was another W movie I love.
Yeah, I love that film.
Yeah.
Ian, did you have any honorable mentions?
Oh, so many. I made the mistake of going to like the top 100 movies of all time and then picking out all the W's. And there's not as many as you think, but... The list was getting exhaustive. So I was like, ugh. So Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is definitely up there, the original, because obviously the new one is Charlie and it's rubbish. Where Eagles Dare? Because I think that's a film that not a lot of people talk about now. It's a classic. When you talk about Clint Eastwood, it's usually the Westerns. It's not something like this, which I think is brilliant. The original Wicker Man, I actually really like. Weird film, but I think it's fantastic. Walk the Line, Johnny Cash biopic, and Where the Wild Things Are would probably round out my list.
Oh, nice. I like that movie.
Another weird film, but I love it. I didn't read the books when I was younger, but that film just caught me on a good day. I love it.
I think that film was mismarketed. I think that is one of the 100% main reasons totally that film doesn't have the love that it deserves, is because it was marketed as like a family drama, you know, kind of thing. And it is just this weird, quirky look at what it feels like to be a child.
It's way more Donnie Darko than it is family.
It's not meant for children, because children don't understand what it means to be a child yet. Like, it takes looking back.
Exactly. There's no context.
Yeah,
I love it. Doesn't get enough love.
Yeah, I agree. Andrew, what about you?
I'll just throw out three, because with a category this broad, you could go on for hours. But I'll go with Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Mm-hmm.
One of the best animated movies ever.
I love that film.
Wayne's World.
Sure.
Which is one of my all-time favorites. It's like how you are with What's Eating Bob? Or What About
What
Bob?
About What's Eating, what's eating Gilbert Bob?
What's Eating Gilbert Bob? Yeah.
What's Eating Wayne's World Bob?
Yeah. Actually, I'll throw out What's Eating Gilbert Grape, yeah. But like, What About Bob? Wayne's World is that quotable movie for me,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you just feel yourself quoting all the time. And then finally, I'll throw out a movie just from my childhood. It's not one of the greats, but it was near and dear to my heart for so many years. I'm going to go with Willow.
Willow was also mentioned in the chat. Yeah, that's a good one to mention,
was it?
Too. Yeah, others mentioned in the chat, War Games was mentioned.
Shall we play a game?
And let's see, Won't You Be My Neighbor, which I think is a good one to throw out there, too. That's definitely a good movie. So I saw that one in the chat.
Oh, yeah.
And Danae wanted us to mention the movie that she loves is Woo Woo McChoo. And so, you know, just want to throw that out.
I like
Drew
Wonder Woman.
Wars Star.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
All right, we're ready for Buried Treasures, guys. It is the guest privilege to go last on this, so I will kick us off. We almost did this for a main review, but did want to get some conversation on it. I'm not sure if I'm the only one that's seen it, but Wrath of Man is a movie, a Guy Ritchie movie that just came out recently, and wanted to talk about that at least just a little bit, because it may be my favorite Guy Ritchie movie. Now, that's... You know, I am, when I say that, please understand, the other Guy Ritchie movies just kind of miss me a little bit. They're a little bit over the top for me. And this is very dialed down, and I really appreciated that. Now, that doesn't mean it's not kinetic. That doesn't mean that Statham, you know, isn't kicking butt. It just means that it's not, you know, mile a minute, you know, heavily accented dialogue and craziness that reaches the extremes. It's a very straight line story about a man who is trying to right a wrong. And I followed it. I was with it the whole time. It never lost me. I never had a moment, you know, where I wanted to check my phone. It held my attention. I think it makes some artistic choices. Like the structure and the timeline of the movie is set up in a very interesting way. The opening scene is downright artistic, and really, really enjoyed it. So this movie's better than it has any right to be. And also being dialed back in that way really gives Statham a chance to show that he can act. Like, he can really act, and he does some really good stuff here. So not sure if either of you have seen it, but I will throw it out there and just say I did enjoy it very, very much.
I haven't seen it, but I'll know if I'll like it based on this question I'm about to ask.
Okay, good.
How many caravans are in this movie?
What do you mean by how many caravans are in this movie?
How many caravans are in the movie? How many caravans? Paddy Winkle Blues.
I don't know if I should be offended or not. I don't know.
I don't know how to answer your question, Andrew. I'm sorry. I wish I knew how to answer that question, but
I hope I do get to see it. I'm not a Guy Ritchie man either. Not a huge fan, but I did like The Gentleman. I really liked The Gentleman. And I think it's hard to say The Gentleman is toned down, but it is compared to something like Smoking Aces or Snatch.
Well, then this is definitely toned down. If you think The Gentleman is toned down, just wait till you see this.
I'm looking forward to it based on that.
I think The Gentleman was like a good callback because, you know, he'd done like the Sherlock movies and stuff like that. And then when he did The Gentleman, it's like, oh, okay, Guy Ritchie is going back to what he knows. Like his original formula with Lock, Stock, and Snatch and Smoking Aces and stuff like that. And Rock and Rolla even. And I actually just rewatched The Gentleman the other day. And I think I liked it even more than when I initially watched it. Like, I'm coming around to really liking that movie a lot.
I'm really interested to see what you think about this one, Andrew, because I have other movie-loving friends who love Guy Ritchie's older stuff who didn't like this because it's so much different than his usual film. So I'd be curious to see kind of what you thought about this one, but I really enjoyed it. Well, I thought it was well told.
I do like his other movies that aren't in that kind of tempo, using the phrase from earlier. Yeah. It's not quite his tempo, but like, you know, the Sherlock movies and stuff like that. I do like those movies. So, I definitely am going to see this one for sure.
Very nice. Andrew, what do you got?
I'm going to go with a book.
Okay.
I've done books on buried treasure for a while. You guys remember Andy Weir, writer of The Martian?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course.
He just released a new book this week. It's called Project Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
It is definitely it's space, you know, except this is more space. I don't know. It's more grandiose than The Martian. The Martian is while it is space, it's all about one man, you know, on a planet trying to survive. This is it's so much larger than what, The Martian is. If I could compare it to anything without getting into spoilers, I'd say this movie is way more Interstellar than what the first book was. It's way more, you know, going beyond our solar system and stuff like that. And there is a real mystery that this book entails. It's all about a guy who wakes up on a ship with amnesia. He doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know if he's on a ship or anything like that. There's a whole finding out. You find out who this guy is as he does. It's really fascinating. And while I'm giving it all that praise, I will say that I think that The Martian just begged to be adapted to film. You know, it was just perfect to be adapted. This one might be a little difficult to adapt. It's not like, it's roughly the same amount, but like things that happen in it, I think people would find too ridiculous. There's things that happen in books, like when you read it, that it just contextually they make it seem more realistic because, you know, they can have narrative dialogue to just, you know, him or to explain away why you should believe that this makes sense, that they can't really do in a movie. But at the same time, I think that this is a fascinating story. And if you like Andy Weir, if you like The Martian, I do think you'll like this one, too.
Nice. Ian, finish us off. What's your buried treasure this week?
So I had to go with something English, which didn't really narrow it down as much as you might think.
So you're going with an English muffin.
Indeed. I would like to recommend crumpets, please, and caravans. I am going to go with something that isn't a buried treasure over here. It's probably the biggest thing on TV. And I might be way off base. I don't know if you guys, this is in America yet, but it's Line of Duty, which is a B. That is not the right thing. Sorry. Good effort. Sorry. But so Line of Duty is it's a TV show that's absolutely huge over here. You can get it on BritBox and a streaming service called Acorn, which is in the States. It is brilliant. It follows it's the equivalent of internal affairs in America. So it's a department that is investigating institutionalized corruption in the police force.
Okay.
It is fantastic. Have you ever seen Luther? Because it's
Love
very
Luther.
Similar to that.
Okay.
Is it the one with Adrian Dunbar and Craig Parkinson? Okay.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
It has
fantastic.
An 8.7 on IMDb. That is
huge.
Amazing.
That's good.
And the 1.3 that it dropped was because of the final series. season, sorry.
Has it fully wrapped up then? It's fully done, or are they going to make some more?
As they say it is, but this thing is just a license to print money, so why wouldn't you make more? Especially as the final season... The final season I liked. It's not on the same level as the other six. But like most British TV shows, it's six or seven episodes long. Each one is an hour episode. Twists, turns, hard themes, really valuable stuff, especially in the world that we live in right now about abuses of power and how everyone is in on it and everyone's brushing it under the carpet. And it's not right. But I could not recommend this TV show hard enough. It's great.
Apparently you can watch it on Prime if you have a Prime membership.
So it's available.
That must be a US thing, because Netflix has got the deal in England, so that's weird. The world is weird. Like, it took us so long to get Lower Decks because of a body of ocean that separates us. Like, just put it on the internet. Just get it up there. That is the correct title card. Well done.
Yeah.
But it's the worst season. You need to pick season one if you're going to pick a title card.
Can we please get this right?
Troll.
Six seasons. Is each season like six-hour episodes?
So I think, if I remember, season one is 4 or 5 episodes, and then it goes to 6, and the final season has 7. But it's a mini-series, essentially. You can binge it in a weekend.
Yeah,
and it's definitely the best way to watch it, is back to back.
Yeah, man, a 36-hour movie is just, it's a hard recommend.
Do it, commit. Next time you pop in Lord of the Rings, don't do this.
Lord of the Rings would be a quarter of the time investment, like the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy.
What, the extended thing is like 2.5 days.
Oh, there, we got a different season of Line of Duty up there for you.
That's the wrong season, but it's fine. It's good. That's still a good one.
No, it sounds amazing. I do have difficulty watching like things I know I have. It's the same with Sopranos. Everybody talks about how amazing Sopranos is. I'm never going to watch it. I just can't see myself.
It seems so overwhelming.
I
totally agree, though. But there's so many episodes of The Sopranos. There's way, way, way more than this.
Yeah.
There's only 36 for Line of Duty.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Come on, Aaron. What are you doing?
Yeah, only 36.
Come on, bro.
I challenge you to watch episode one and not think, how was that not 6 episodes of content in one episode?
Yeah.
And you're just like, wait, what? How has it only been an hour? How did they do all of that? It's great.
I'll watch
it. So it's like Raised by Wolves.
Yeah.
Where you watch the first episode and you're like, that was like 15 episodes.
I will I'll watch all 6 seasons of Line of Duty, but I have to be able to assign you 18 different movies that you have to watch in the same amount of time.
Absolute deal. That's fine. And well done, Drew. That is the exact correct poster. That is exactly the one. Perfect. Well done.
I'm glad we finally got that. For those listening on the audio podcast, it was touch and go there for a second, but we got the right to...
I don't know who's finding the
video. Video there. Or, excuse me, image there of the show. Well done.
Worst buried treasure ever.
No, I love it, actually. I really think this is part of the fun of having kind of an international... cast to what we do, is the ability to have recommendations like this. And as frustrating as it is to know that there are these weird international laws that keep things on certain streamers and stuff comes later for everybody else and all that kind of stuff, there's also the beauty of technology in that we are more than ever passing on our culture to each other in that way. And that doesn't just go for English speaking cultures. A lot of the Asian entertainment that's influenced a lot of the English speaking cultures has been really fun as well. In fact, so much so, like I hear stuff of they're remaking Your Name. They're doing an English version of the anime Your Name, and I'm just like,
what?
But the original's so good.
I don't get it.
It is part of what I love about having people on in that way. Well, we did it, guys. I think we accomplished a podcast.
Yay!
We set out to podcast and eventually made it happen. thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thank you.
Thanks to Drew for putting together the artwork, including several different versions of one of the buried treasures today.
He's working on his tippy toes today. Big claps for that.
And thank you to Ian for joining us today. Woo! Ian, where would you like people to find you on the internet? What do you want to plug today?
Well, thank you for having me, guys. It's been awesome. It's been so much fun. So you can find me on An Englishman and an Irishman Go to the Movies, which is also wherever you cast your pods, you can find it there. Or I'm most active on Twitter, and my handle is galactic_Dave, which, yes, has a backstory.
Well, I would assume
have you got an hour and a half?
No, we don't have an hour. Good. And a half, in fact. We do appreciate you, and hope to see you again on the show. If you want to support what goes on here at Sif Pop, you can do that by becoming a Sif Pop member and giving monthly. Support starts at $3 a month. There are levels with access to the bonus episodes, ad-free podcast, monthly hangouts, all sorts of fun perks. You can check that out at patreon.com/sifpop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts. Or you can email us, feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than holding your tongue. We will be back next week with some more fun reviews, Those Who Wish Me Dead and Army of the Dead. We will have a very dead show next week, so we will see you then.
Yeah.